Welcome to Global Citizen Life. Today on the podcast, we have Charm. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Sally, for having me. It's a pleasure, and I can't wait to see what we get ourselves into.
I'm excited too. So let's go back a little bit in time and talk about kind of where you grew up and where you're living now.
Okay. I grew up in Bristol, England. Born in Bristol and raised in Birmingham, to be exact. And I have Jamaican parents. So, you know, back then Jamaica was in the 1960s, Jamaica was a British colony. So you could go back and forth, right, with just a visa. And a lot of Jamaicans would go to England for a better life. So my mother was 6 months pregnant with me when she took the leap, only knowing my uncle in England, 6 months pregnant with me, and went to England by herself with a little baby in her tummy, just because she wanted a better life. And she got to England and stayed with my uncle for a couple of months, and then ended up, you know, at the hospital. And thank God for socialized medicine. They gave her, you know, they gave her help and welfare and whatever they called it over there, but it was assistance. It was government assistance. They put her in a little place with me, and she started her little journey by herself with this little girl in England. And she met my dad shortly thereafter. About a year later, he adopted me. So on my British birth certificate, it stamped adoption, which it wasn't before, because of course, when I was born, I had her maiden name.
Right.
And then years later, when I was applying for my passport again and everything, they said the birth certificate was wrong, and they sent me a new one, and it had adopted stamped on it, because my dad actually did adopt me and give me his last name, Francis. So, but when I was about nine, my mom decided that a lot of her brothers and sisters had migrated to America, and they were like, it's a little better here. Come here, right, with us, and we can help you thrive. So she packed me and my brother up and moved us to England, but she did not tell us. She just told me we were going on a little trip for a visit.
Ooh.
So, and one of the reasons why she didn't tell me is because I was a child prodigy. So I was very, very smart, very inquisitive, and could read at 2 and 3 years old. As soon as I could talk, I could read. And if she told me, I would have like given her the business, right? Bad enough, she didn't tell me. And I already knew the day that we were supposed to come back home to England, because I had looked at my ticket, my round trip ticket, and it was February 26th, 1973. So I had packed my bags up the night before to go home.
Ready to go home.
As a nine-year-old, right? So I got up early that morning knowing what time the flight was, and said, Mom, get up. It's time to go home. And she said, we're not going home. So that's how I ended up living in the United States. And yeah, a lot went on there with getting a green card and living that life. And my aunt, back then, somebody has to sponsor you. So my aunt sponsored us, got our green cards, and then later on we applied for citizenship. But it was not an easy road.
Right.
Not an easy road. No. School, things like that, it wasn't easy. But here we are, years later, and I live in Atlanta, Georgia, which is where I chose to live, because we moved so much when I was a child. It was not unusual for me to spend 6 months in one place and be gone to another place and be gone to another place. My mother just always wanted to find the right place for her, and she was not afraid to move. She was not afraid to get up and move. So I'm not afraid to get up and move. However, you know, as a child, you need a little bit more stability and a little bit more roots. So she had gotten me, when we were living in Washington, D.C., that's just one of the states we lived in. I love to read, and I love the Essence magazine. So she saw that every time I was in the grocery store, I'd run to get the magazine and thumb through it before we leave. And so she was like, you know what, I'm gonna get it was a nice surprise, but she got me a subscription for my birthday, I think it was. And one of the subscriptions talked about all the successful women, Black women in Atlanta, Georgia. And I said, Mom, when I grow up, I'm going to be a successful Black woman in Atlanta, Georgia. That was just the state I picked. And sure enough, I was 12 years old then, and I was like determined, I want to live in Atlanta, Georgia. And I want to be a
Because
successful Black.
that's you saw that's where all the successful Black women were, and so that's where you were going.
That's right. And I made that happen. I made that happen. By the time I was 22, 23, I was on trek trying to get to Atlanta. And I've been here ever since, even though I might move, sell my house in Atlanta, have to move somewhere else because of work, I'll sell my house there and move back to Atlanta. I've done that 30 times.
Okay. Maybe now instead of selling, just rent
No, right? Thank you so much, Sally. That would have been really great, and I wish I had met you before now.
Right. Yeah. Kind of late now to say it, but.
I really did need to just rent it, but back then I never thought to do that kind of thing.
I mean, we never know where we're going to be in the future, right? We don't
Right.
know. When we're moving, we think like that's it. And maybe, you know, sometimes it's good to just let things go because even if you come back, you could be in a new area. So even though it's the same city, a new area, it's kind of like a new start. You can be in a different part of it. So
So I live here in Atlanta. Love it.
okay, great. And so you moved around a lot. So you moved to a lot of different states. So how was that kind of been as a child for developing friendships and going to different schools all the time? I went to a couple different schools as a kid, but not, we didn't move that much.
Oh, it wasn't good. Right. It wasn't good. Like I said, I was a child prodigy, and I can't even imagine where I would be if I'd had more stability. So, friendships, I had to make the decision. I had to make the decision when I was 13. We were living in DC or Maryland. And I said to my, and the longest I'd ever lived anywhere was Rhode Island, Providence, Rhode Island. When we left New York, we came to Providence, and I spent maybe 2 or 3 years in Providence, and I gained the most relationships and friendships there. So when my parents moved to DC, that was just too much of a transition for me. There was a lot of bullying going on. I had a British accent. It just wasn't, I wasn't well received. I can say this just, I wasn't Black enough and I wasn't white enough. It just, it, you know, so you just fall in this crack, right? So at school, I'm not accepted by Black people, and at school, I'm not accepted by white people. So it was just too hard for me. And I almost developed anorexia nervosa. I just didn't know what it was. So I started losing weight, but I thought it was the coolest thing. And it was just because I was eating less. You're depressed, so you're eating less. And I'm seeing these results on the scale, and I'm thinking, my goodness, this is amazing. So I started eating less and less because I thought it was cool, right? I thought it was cool. And my mom happened to take me for a physical, and the doctor took her aside. She tells me the story later. The doctor took her aside and said, listen, she's not happy, she's not doing well, and she's losing a lot of weight. He said, you're very fortunate because she's not vomiting, she's not doing anything. She's
She's
just
just not
controlling,
eating.
right? But that's the only thing that she can control. You guys are, right? I'm getting a little emotional. It's the only thing she has because you're not allowing her to stay in one place. You're not allowing her to adjust and meet friends and be able to, So it's the only thing she can control. So he said, you're very lucky. She has no idea what that word means. She has no idea what it is, but you've got to send her, you've got to allow her to control something. So my mom, like I said, I got to give her credit. I didn't know till years later, and I told her, well, I just want to go home to Rhode Island. I'll go live with my aunt. And that was a very hard thing for a parent to hear, right? I don't want to live with you. I want to go home to my aunt in Rhode Island, because at least that was stability. When we came to this country, we moved with my aunt and my three cousins, and we formed our little bond there. And then my mom got her own apartment, but we were just up the street. So at least I could go to my aunt's house every day, and I could see my cousins every day. And that was my only source of stability. And my mother's got itchy feet. She's a Sagittarius. Dear God, they can just roam all over the planet. They're just happy doing that, right? And so I went back to my aunt, and my aunt put me in high school, classical high school in Providence, which is a school for the gifted. And you have to take an exam to get in. And they had just skipped me a grade in DC, and I was going to college in George Washington University in DC, a special program for gifted children. So I skipped a grade and then came to Providence and went from seventh to ninth, no eighth. Now that was a real challenge. But, I developed really good friends in high school, that helped me, that tutored me. I want to say that my best friend in the whole world was Maureen McCartan. I lost her 3 years ago to pancreatic cancer. And we were 14 when we met, and we were still in love when she died at 57. We spent all those years keeping in touch, and now I'm the I'm a surrogate mom to Meg, her daughter, who's 23 now. But that being the case, that is when I finally started to develop some relationships and some friendships that I've kept lifelong.
So do you, from that experience, do you are you on kind of like either extreme kind of end of the pendulum, I guess I'll put it, where you find it very hard now to develop still those friendships, or do you get good friendships and hold on to them really strong? Are you still kind of in the middle?
No, I have amazing friendships all over the world. And I think that might be me, right? I'm very open, and I'm a life coach. I love people. I love the collective. So I think that's the reason why I suffered so much as a child, because this is who I am. So when I wasn't able to form those relationships and give people love and receive it, it was detrimental to me. Once I was able to come into the fullness of me as a teenager, and was able to be stable, I was able to flourish, right? Thrive. And so I have thousands and thousands of amazing people around the planet that I love and that love me. So I wouldn't have known this if I hadn't known the other. So the other is important.
That it is true.
Being confined and not being able to form those relationships made me appreciate relationships with people that much more. And being global, right? My company's name is Global Coaching. It doesn't matter who the people are, what the nationality is. It's very exciting to me to find that common thread to connect with them. I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. My sister-in-law is from Cambodia, and I'm niece from Bali. Just everything, everything. I've
That's
got a beautiful
fantastic.
tapestry.
Yes, that is it is great. And so, Atlanta, Georgia is home, but you've also had to move abroad for work for a period of
Yes.
time,
Yeah, I
because you
had to
said
move.
you've moved away from Atlanta and then you come back.
Right.
And so, how was where did you go, and how was that kind of transition in time?
Oh, it was rough. I went to Germany.
Okay.
I went to Aachen, Frankfurt, Belgium, where I did not speak the language. The people were wonderful to me, because I would just be spinning around in the middle of the street. I only had to do it for 3 months, but that's a long 3 months when you can't speak the language. And you ask the hotel staff, could you, I need to take the train, and I need to go from here to here. Could you map it out for me? And they're like, oh, sure, be happy to. And so they put it in a lovely envelope for you, and you leave out and you go get a cab. When you open the envelope, it's all in German.
Of course, right? Of course.
Oh my God, please, Jesus, help me. Oh, no. I had this piece of paper just walking up to anybody that, because, anybody that would get, I make eye contact, I would walk up to them, smile, and hand them the paper. And they would look and they would, oh, and they would be so sweet. One would put me on one train, and then they might say to somebody else, help her when she gets off of this train to get her to that train. Or, oh, dear God.
So nice. I mean, there's so many wonderful, nice people in the world. There
There
really
really are.
are.
Oh my gosh, yes. There really, really are. So, I did France, I did Germany, and then I did England. So I got to go home, and I got cousins there. They picked me up at Heathrow, and it was so nice to see them because they had actually come to the States on several occasions to visit me over my life, over that time. When I was a teenager, those same cousins had come and spent time. Then when I was in my 30s living in Florida, those same cousins had come over. So now here I was
Nice.
in my 50s and I called WhatsApp them. That's the main, right? That's the main, WhatsApp. WhatsApp me, and I WhatsApp them and said, I'm coming to London. I'm going to be there for like 3 weeks. And they were right there front and center, right there at the airport.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
great.
But it was the work. I mean, they do things so differently. Like, I'm a nurse, and one of the reasons why I had to fly over there is that we had had a failed launch in Europe. Now, I saw it coming, but they didn't listen to me. Leadership team doesn't, they didn't listen to me. I said, you're making a big mistake. If you don't send me over there early, you're going to end up sending me over there later, and it's going to be a botched launch. And it was a botched launch. And just like nursing, over here in the States, nurses have our scope of practice is much broader than it is there. You over there, if you come over here and you go to the emergency room and you need IVs, the nurse is going to start the IV, and they're going to give you, right, the doctor's going to say, start the IV and give them some D5 normal saline. Over there, the doctor starts the IV.
Really? I hope they have a lot of doctors on staff then.
So there you go. The doctor was in the operating room. The IV needed to be started so the patient could get the drug that I was helping them to administer, but the drug had a shelf life. And the doctor was in the operating room and the drug expired right in front of our faces. And it's a tough thing because you make that particular treatment with the patient's own cells. It was an immunotherapy. And it was the first of its kind in the world. So I had told them, listen, we don't know logistically how they do things over there. It would make more sense for me to go over there and help them incorporate it into how they do things so that they'll know their timelines and they'll know how they're doing it. And my people told me, now they'll be fine. And they weren't fine. So the very first time they just let the thing expire. And then I get the call in the middle of the night. Oh, you need to fly to Europe. I'm like, not so fast. It's Christmas. We're gonna have to wait now. Yeah. They wanted me to fly over the whole entire Christmas holiday and do it. And I was like, nope, we're gonna wait till January the 7th. And
And
but since I would go ahead.
so that's something for, that people really kind of need to know too, that in all businesses, not just like that's a great example for nursing, but in all businesses, we should never assume that how we do something in whatever country we're living in is
That's
going to
right.
be the same as the way they do things in another country that we're potentially moving to or going
Correct.
to. And we need to really look at that
Do
because
that
the way
research.
things are done can be very different.
Was extremely different. We did not see that coming, but their scope of practice is completely different. Now, me as a nurse, I had a feeling that it was different because I've met nurses from other countries and they come here, right? And they come here and they're like, oh, we are not allowed to do that in our country, or we do that different in our country, or we use different equipment in our country. So I got that sense for sure, right? I got
Even
that.
from Canada to the United States, there's things that are different. So I was many years ago an emergency medical technician for an on the ambulance, an EMTA. And I went down to the States to do some of my practicum and things for being on the ambulance. And there we like here we can give IVs, but we can't take blood, which was really weird because you got to stick them with a needle anyway. But down there it was very normal that to do both. And so there was a little bit of conflict. I'm like, well, yes, I know how to do this, but am I allowed? I'm here, so yes, I am, but no, I'm not. And so even just between Canada and the United States, within the healthcare industry, there's changes a bit, but other than that, generally a lot of work things are very similar.
Exactly. So very different though. But you would think that they were, you would think, you just think about us in Europe and, we just think we're
The
alike.
same, you would think it's the same, other than maybe some little differences, but to start an IV,
No.
take blood, it would be the same.
Right. They make them take the NCLEX completely over. Every country, if you come here, you've got to take the NCLEX completely over again. You're not a nurse when you get here.
But and it's interesting though, but you can arrive with a visa to be a nurse, and that's why you got here. Like this is what happens in Canada with doctors too. We need so many doctors that we'll bring doctors over, but then, oh no, now you have to go to school for, I don't know, like 2 years or something to be a doctor here. But we let you here because you're a doctor, but now you can't work here as a doctor. Like in a way, it makes
Boggles
no
my mind.
sense. Like I get, okay, do the training, have things lined up, but they don't even have that lined up.
No,
So yeah.
no. Yeah, I met many doctors that were working side by side with me that had to go to nursing school or were phlebotomists while they're going back. A lot of them don't go to be MDs again because that's a lot of work.
And like I get if we do things, procedures are different, policies are different. Sure, you have to
Agreed.
do some courses and some training, but let's be honest, the human body with medicine is the human body no matter where you live in the world.
Absolutely, 100%. 100%. So, it gets really kooky, but and I understand, like, because you don't know what the standard is and you don't know how they were trained, but that's something we could find out. We could get the curriculum and we could do curriculum for curriculum, right? But I don't know if they even, because in Europe they'll argue that their curriculum is more robust. I don't know because I didn't go to nursing school in Europe. I do not know. But I do know we should look at it.
Absolutely. We and it's good to look, no matter where you are, to look at other ones because there's always improvements. There's always like and I've heard many stories of how things business is done that's very different in Japan and how you greet people and good business cards and everything and it's very different. So it's good to do the research and know where we're going or even to know how they do things and take the positives. Take those things that are done well, that work well, and incorporate them into what we do.
Correct. I know.
So you had that experience, and that was quite interesting, and learning a lot, and seeing family and stuff. So that was great. And then you came back to Atlanta.
Yes, I came back to Atlanta. I did.
Okay.
I came back to Atlanta, worked here again, and still with my same job. And I've been doing that all along. I've been doing that all along, back and forth, back and forth. Florida. And then my job is national. My job is national. So I'm the only four states that I haven't been to is Alaska. I haven't been to Alaska, North Dakota, South Dakota. There's one more. I want to say Wisconsin.
Okay.
No, I know that's not true. I've been to
Oh.
Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, Alaska. There's only four. I can't remember the fourth one. That's it.
Okay. Wow.
I mean, I've
Wow.
spent a lot of time away, and it's been, I'm not surprised, right? Because, and people say to me all the time, oh, you love to travel. And I say, I don't know if I love to travel or if travel loves me, because I'm always called to travel.
Right.
But I can say this honestly. Honestly, I can say this, that if I'm home for longer than 2 weeks, I get very, very itchy.
Interesting.
I do. I've got to get on a plane, not a car. Got to get on a plane. So
Plane somewhere.
something has happened to me over the last 50 years because I
Well,
get
that
antsy.
could be bits of your mom. Your mom
Yes.
from moving around when you were younger, there's still that, it leaves an impression or it leaves a mark or something that's still part of you because that was you with your family when you were quite young and moving around a lot.
Agreed. I blame it on my mother all the time. I says my mother's itchy feet, that somehow she, got into my pores somewhere, because
Right.
I,
Well, and it's a good thing because it's where you're at now,
yeah,
and if you didn't or you hated it, you wouldn't be doing what you would be doing. That there would be
no,
some difference in life.
absolutely. I wouldn't have this level of career. Because it'll say, must travel 70% of the time, which means 100. But,
Yeah.
and so you've got to be versatile and you've got to be adaptable and mutable and changeable. Things, all kinds of things change and happen. And, I was listening to one of your shows about COVID, and that's so funny because I was stuck in the airport right the day that they said, okay, all flights are grounded, but I was already there to travel. So, and I traveled all through COVID, all through it. Yeah.
I traveled through COVID as well. People are
Yeah.
like, how? And I'm like, it's like residency, citizenships,
Yeah.
different places, like
Yeah.
knowing what was going on. A lot of it is knowledge. It was knowing what was going on, which countries had which rules.
Right.
I've taken a lot of COVID tests. I'll tell you that
Yeah,
though.
did
I ended up I had to take a lot of
you?
COVID. I was like, I'm not staying stuck if I have to take a COVID test. I
Then
remember at
we'll do
one
it.
point, what was it? So I was in Montenegro and I was leaving Montenegro and I had to do a test before I left and I got to Barcelona. They did a test on arrival, even though I had done one just before a 2 hour flight. And so I did another one. And then I was only in Barcelona for about 3 days, I think. And then I was flying back to Canada. And then so I had to do a test again the day before leaving. And then when I arrived, I had a random selection test again. I was like, I've
Yeah.
done four tests in like 6 days or something. But I just thought, you know what, whatever. If it allows me to travel,
That's
that's
right.
fine. I'll take the tests. I don't really care. I'm not being locked up or stuck in one
No.
single country. It's not
I wasn't
happening.
either. I wasn't either. It did not happen. I was not. I was, first of all I can say in this moment is that my sciences that I studied in college were virology, cytology, immunology. So I knew too much, and I'll stop there. I knew too much. So I wasn't about to let all of that affect me or my family.
Right. Yeah.
That's all I can tell you is that that was my actual, and my job, I was in immunotherapy.
Right.
Immunotherapy. So I knew
So.
in real time that everything isn't what it seems. That's all I'm going
Right.
to say.
And I just knew that I loved to travel and be places, and there's no way I was going to stay stuck anywhere.
And you could.
And yeah,
People
and
believed
that's
they could not leave there. They believed it.
right.
I had people that
But
never let
having, I know, but having also having multiple residencies and citizenships make a big difference as well. So it made it very easy because I was with my residency in Spain. I'm like, well, I'm a resident. Here's my card. Oh yeah, no problem. Or I'm going back to Canada to visit family and friends. Well, I didn't say to visit, but I'm like, I'm a
Right.
Canadian citizen. I'm going to Canada. Oh yeah, no problem. And so
Yes.
then, and that's when I really kind of really got the start to really start pushing things with global citizen life because it was just my lifestyle before. And people would ask
Right.
me like, how do I do this or move here or do that? And I would always help. But once that the pandemic happened, that was then I thought, like, there's a lot of people you don't know what you don't know.
Right. You
right?
don't.
And that's reality. Like, I didn't know a lot of things that I didn't know, and I figured it out over many years. And so now with the things that I know, I can help people and share that, and then never, as I say, I will never be stuck under the control of any one single government ever in my life.
Agreed. Agreed. And that's why I said when I saw your channel and this podcast and what you actually do, I'm like, this is phenomenal. Right. This is a real resource because I'm not going to live in the States, right? I've already decided that, I'm on the back nine and I'm considering where I'm going to live. And having a resource like yours is going to be absolutely 100% what we're going to need. Of course, because I do not suggest just going flying by the seat of your pants. I don't suggest
Well, no,
that.
you have to. I mean, people need to look inwards. Like, I've dealt with and talked with people that and have known people that just will up and move. And I'm actually kind of one of them, but I'm single, and so it's easy for me to just up and move by myself because it is just me. But I've known people that their families move, and they like when they moved to Costa Rica for 6 months, bought a restaurant, and well, they moved there, bought a restaurant, and 6 months later they moved back to the United States because they didn't like it. I'm like, do you know how much money they lost from selling all their stuff in the United States, buying and spending 6 months in Costa Rica, then selling everything? Because when you sell your house, okay, fine, maybe you'll make some money depending upon how long you've had. But when you sell all your stuff in it, and then you have to rebuy it, and then 6 months later you're in another country and you do it again. It's like you just didn't do some proper research. Like, what are you looking for? Right. So when it's your time to come, it'll be, when you look at where you are at that stage of your life, what do you want? What are your values? What type of politics do you want? What type of maybe religious factors you need to take into consideration? What geopolitics type things are you want? Because the what I
It's
see what
true.
happens with some people is they want to change, they want different. They're lonely, they're sad, they don't like their life. I get it. We most of us go through stages of that. But just because you move, if you're lonely, sad, and don't like your life, you're going to enjoy for about 6 months because everything's all new in a new city. But you know who you're stuck with? Yourself. And if you're not happy with you, it doesn't matter where in the world you go, you're not going to be happy with you unless you keep moving every 6 months just to find new. But eventually, I've done that, moved around a lot, and trust me, it gets old too.
Yes, absolutely. That's why we talked about those roots.
That's right.
Because I've lived so many places, I know what I'm looking for, but I'm not lonely or any of that stuff. I just know the kind of lifestyle that lends to me being more creative, that gives me more of a creative outlet. If I'm seeing the rocks and the water and the cliffs and the this, it lends to more creativity. And then, I want to do more my retreats full time. And a place like that, you can offer that to the people that are assigned to you, right? So that's the reason why I want to do it. And maybe I could find it in the United States. But I have a feeling that's because I've lived abroad and I love Europe so much. When I go back home to Europe, I exhale.
Love Europe.
When I go to Jamaica, I exhale. But it's not the safest place, and I'm not going to shy away from that, right? And I'm not going to shy away from that fact. It's not the safest place, and I know I've been there 100 times, and I've built a house there. It's not the safest place for me. Personally, it's not the safest place. The Jamaicans will say, "Oh, don't be like that, man. It's okay." And I'm going, "Yeah, for you guys, because you guys live here. You guys live here every day." But I've had several family members. So,
Yeah,
it's not
we really need to look at,
everything.
all of the aspects of what we want, the lifestyle we want, and to take in, let's be honest, to take into consideration of religion and things like that. Like, I was recently in Dubai, visiting a friend of mine. She's been to well over 100 countries, and she loves Dubai. She has actually moved to Dubai now. Dubai is home. She lives there. She has a place, her business, like everything. And she absolutely loves it. And when I mentioned to a few people that I was going to Dubai, they're like, "Why would you want to go there? It's not safe. Or women aren't treated very well. It's terrible." And when I got there, I was like, "Oh my gosh, this place is so clean.
Yes.
And we were working one afternoon on our computers and stuff, and her friend walks by and says, "Hey, come outside on the terrace and let's have a drink." She's like, "Oh, okay, we'll be there in about 10 minutes." And so I start like packing up my computer and my purse, and she's like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm getting everything packed up. We're gonna meet your friend for a drink." She's like, "You can just leave it here." I said, "No, like I can't leave. I
Right.
live in Barcelona. I can't even go to the bathroom and leave my computer on the like anywhere. Like I
No,
can't
I've
even hang
been
my
there.
purse on the back of my
Are you kidding? I
chair."
was mauled in Barcelona in the elevator,
Yeah,
for God's
it's I've yeah, and
freezing.
so you know, and I but I still love Barcelona. There's great things, but yeah,
Yeah, of
you
course, of
can't leave
course.
your
But I'm
can't leave your
like,
stuff. And she's like,
yeah.
no, just leave it. And I look at her and I'm like, I'm taking my purse. Like I'll leave my
Right.
computer. I'll chance
No.
it. Like I'm risking it. And we were
Right.
gone for well over an hour, and our stuff was just there. Like things generally don't disappear. And I can't say that it would never happen, but
Right.
they've got some pretty strict rules there. Like you break the law, you're in
You're
trouble. And
right.
you know, kind of don't mind that because when
Exactly,
I'm
because
looking at Europe and parts of North
right.
America and things with what's going
Yeah.
on, I'm thinking like,
Yeah, there's no consequences.
yeah, there's none. And there is. Like they're not gonna pickpocket, they're not gonna steal from you. Like it's so
Right.
rare for those things to happen that,
Exactly.
you know, and yes, it's more expensive, but I thought, well, okay, it's more
If I
expensive
think,
comparatively, we've gotta look,
right.
but what am
If
I
my
getting for return?
exactly my safety is like pretty much insured, I'm good with
Yeah.
that, right? I
Yeah,
mean, I'm
yeah.
just good with that. No, I get it. Like I said, I'm just seriously thinking about it. I'm not sure where, but to your point, when it comes to, like the, safety and things like that, all of those things are to be considered. And that's why
Yes.
your, what you offer is so powerful, because at least you have somebody to say, hey, I'm thinking about this place. What all do I need to consider? And, have somebody coach you through that, right? Oh, I mean, I'm just excited because I really am thinking of a few places. And
And sometimes
I
you need
know
to
I've
consider too is, you know, do you want to be close to your home country? Do you have aging parents? Do you have kids in college or university? Do you have grandkids you want to get
all
back
of
to?
that.
You know, all of that. And weather conditions. Are you okay with rainy season for 3 months or tropical storms and hurricanes and earthquakes? And like, I don't like earthquakes. I've
Right.
been in a few. I don't like them. Like, I
Okay,
don't really
right.
want to be in a place that has earthquakes.
That's great.
And so there's
See?
lots
That's
of little things that people really do need to consider because, you know, if you're making the move abroad, it's a big step. It costs money, and we want you to enjoy life. Again, if
exactly.
you don't like it, you can move on. Or sometimes it's just not the right city. It could be the right country,
Right, and
but
not the right
cities are
city.
different as well within the country. So,
Right. What do you like to do for entertainment? Do they offer what you like?
absolutely.
Do you, like I'm a big theater person. For God's sakes, if they don't have the theater and jazz and little jazz clubs, where I can just go listen to live music, that's probably not my place, right?
Right. Right. So Montenegro might not be on your list because I'm not sure of many places. It's just so small. It's just so small. It's beautiful. It's nature, and I do love
Right.
it there, but I do get bored.
And
So
where is
I've got the stuff
Montenegro?
where I'm kind of split my time between Barcelona and Montenegro.
Okay, is that
So
where you
it's
are
for me, it's
now?
the best of both. Well, currently, while we're recording this right now, I'm in Canada,
Okay.
but I'll be heading back shortly, I think. But yeah, like I'm always travel. I come to Canada once a year, and I love Barcelona, but sometimes I'm just like, oh, I just want some peace and quiet to get away from it all.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I go to Montenegro, and I'm in nature, and it's quiet, and I love it. And then after a while, I'm bored. I'm like, oh, I'm so bored. I need more action. And I head back to Barcelona. And so for
Yes.
me, that is good. I have friends in both, you know, and it's I do have some kind of roots a little bit in both.
Oh, nice.
But I do get the best of both because, and it's the 2 or 2.5 hour flight. So it's
Yeah,
nice.
not bad at all. I went to Tenerife, I went to Madrid.
Okay.
And then we had a big storm and I was stuck in Tenerife for another 5 days.
Oh,
Oh,
wow.
so sad.
That's awful that you were stuck
Yeah.
there in the islands.
Sad,
That's
very
too
sad,
bad.
yeah. But yeah, it was
Excellent.
good. Yeah.
Good. And so with your work, you're now coaching people.
Yes.
And in what ways are you coaching them? What are you mostly helping
No, it's
people with?
no money, the energy of
Ah,
money. I
okay.
believe that money is energy. It's not just paper. And it goes right back to when I'm a child and immigrant parents and all that. But money eluded me. And that's because I realized now on the other end now, because I've been doing this for 20 years now, that I had a money wound. And that's what I call the money wounds. And we've got four money identities that I've come up with. We've got the money monk, hates money. Money's bad. It's the root of all evil. It's everybody's problem. Nobody needs to have it. It's terrible. That's the monk. The avoider. I don't want to see money. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I don't want to pay my bills. I'm not going to look at any checks. I'm not going to write any checks. And if I do, I don't really know what I wrote. The avoider. That's me. The recovering. I am a recovering avoider because I'm doing very, very well now. The spender. They spend it long before they have it. They spend it when they do have it. And if they don't have it, they still spend it. And the hoarder. The hoarder. They
Just
have it.
keep it,
They
keep it,
never
keep it, keep
circulate
it, but
it.
don't spend it.
Don't spend it. They don't spend it on themselves. They don't spend it on others. They're not generous. My hoarder is Ebenezer Scrooge. That's my hoarder. He was sick. He was debilitated, and his little nephew was sick, and he would let a child die before he would help with childcare or food, or the hoarder can get really, really dicey. Yeah. So I help people that find themselves paycheck to paycheck, never have enough money, could actually make good money, still don't have it. Still never, and don't understand why, and they're sick of the rat race, sick and tired of it. Why don't I ever have enough money? And that was me years and years ago. And I was tired of it. And I decided to do some, just really sit and do some inner work on that. And went to classes. And really what sparked it for me was I was listening to Louise Hay, and she said, money is the easiest thing in the world to attract. And that really angered me. How dare she say something like that? That's not true. I'm broke and I work every day and I work hard and I work two jobs, three jobs, and I know I'm doing everything right. So I don't know why she would say that. Oh, she was so right. Oh, she was so right. It's the easiest thing to attract once you become in the flow and understand your own if you have them money wounds. And once I started on that path, because I became a life coach 20 years ago, and I thought I'd be a career coach or a life purpose coach, and that's really where I was going. But what was happening was I was still doing a lot of the inner work around money, but I didn't see that coming. I didn't see that coming. So I'm there helping people with their life and their career. But when you're coaching people, everything comes up. So you're working on different parts of the life wheel, because there's lots of, the life wheel has about eight sections at least. Like you said, religion, finances, career, relationship, parenting. It could be your life wheel, right? And you name your life wheel, and then you look at all the areas of your life wheel where you're struggling. And what I found is that the part of the life wheel where it was money or finances, that was the part of the life wheel that I was more gifted in helping people to look at. And because I had such a vested interest myself, for me, and I started working on it for me, I started helping others work on it too. And I went from that to seven figures. And I had to look back and say, what all did I do? And when I started looking back at all that I did, I realized there was an actual method. And then I started helping other people with the method, right? Who are you? What did you learn about money? Where did you get that from? Is that working for you now? Are you happy with where you are now? That sort of thing. Because some people are good, right? This is not for everybody. And some people are not good. And they always, those people, when they're not good, they fall into one of those four or a couple of those. And then, now that you are aware, that it's not just you, right? It's not you. You developed money behaviors, money habits, and a money belief when you were younger. And it has followed you. You have fallen into that box. If you had a, and money doesn't grow on trees. No, you're not going to get that. This, all of those things, there's no streets of gold out there. Or you had a parent that always spent their money, never had any money. You know, we've seen people squander money, you know, or we've seen people be so tight with money, right? All of that, you got it from somewhere. Is it serving you? It was no longer serving me. My parents argued over money, and sometimes it got violent when I was in England. And as a result of that, I was afraid. To me, money was a source of friction and pain and just really awkward. So I didn't want to have anything to do with it. The only thing is you tell you that self and subconsciously, and you don't know, you're living from that place every day. So you're working for money, you want it, but actually you don't. You want it,
Interesting.
but you're avoiding it. The two can't go together. You can't want something but avoid it. It doesn't work. Universal law, it will not work. So I started getting into vibrational energy, universal law, and just working that all the way through and becoming congruent with the fact that I do want money. So I could not avoid it anymore. I had to look at it. I had to open up my bank account. I had to look at my checks. I had to look at my statements. I had to write it down, sing about it, right? Develop a healthy relationship with my money. Once I started, and it was a long process, you know, and when I say a long process, because at first I didn't even know. Now I got it down and I can help people in much quicker time than I, right? It's the way it always is. It's not going to take everybody as long as it took me, because I developed the money, the identities and the wounds and the this and the that, and how, and vibrational energy and everything else with the vibrational energy scale. So I've done all that work to help people move through and get from here to there much quicker than I did. And finding out what the passive income streams are, you doing what you love? That'll come towards the end of, because I the abundance quest, you take the abundance quest with me, and that's a 10 that's a one it's a course, and it's got 10 chapters in it. But that being the case, you go from what vibrational energy do you sit at normally? What did you learn as a child? What are your limiting beliefs around money? To all the way to the other end, where passive income streams, you know, living from a place of gratitude and above, you know, understanding that if you're not doing work that you love, it's still counterintuitive to making good money. Yes, there's a lot of people that make good money not doing what they love. However, that is counterintuitive to joy. And I would say that that money is easier to leave you. I've seen it over and over again. I hate this job. I don't like this job. The money's great. Then all of a sudden, everything goes south because you're not in a high vibrational space and you're not congruent with the two. So I, you know, you get to that end of the where you're doing what you love. Even if you're doing what you love and you're still working a job right now that doesn't necessarily make you happy, but it pays the bills, what happens is your vibrational energy still rises because you're feeding your soul. And you're still feeding your soul. Part-time is better than no time at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, if people wanted to work with you, what is the best way for them to get in touch with you?
They can reach me at iamcharmin.com. There they can send me an email, you know, or, you know, iamcharmin@gmail.com is my email address. I'll definitely reach back out. But I've got my website, theabundancequest.net. You can go, you can get the course, you know, my book, The Lessons of a Life Coach, that's also on Amazon, by Charmin Morris. So there's a lot of ways to reach me. There's a lot of ways to.
Perfect. Perfect. And I'll make sure to put links to all of that in the show notes to make it even easier for everybody to get in touch with you.
That's awesome. Thank you so
I
much.
just want to say thank you so much for your time today. I know our listeners got a lot of valuable information, and it was great speaking with you, and I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Sally. It was a pleasure doing this podcast with you today. Blessings on everything that you're doing out here to help everybody globally figure out what that looks like for them in their next steps.